Well, you can turn with me to Genesis 46, please. And if you're using one of the Bibles that's in the seat in front of you, that's page 37. Genesis 46. Maybe you've had the experience, a long absence from someone you love. Maybe it was a work trip that lasted for several weeks, and you were so eager to get back to your family, or maybe it was a break between school semesters when you didn't see that boyfriend or girlfriend for a while, or maybe it was deployment for the military when you didn't see your spouse for several months or longer. Whatever your experience, you might remember the day of reunion. Racing through the airport or driving faster than you should because you want to see your loved ones again. Well, last week in Genesis 45, Joseph finally revealed himself to his brothers. And after that reunion, he sent them back to Canaan to get his dad, Jacob, and to bring him and the whole family down into Egypt. And when the brothers got back to Canaan, they finally convinced their dad, yes, Joseph, your favorite son, is still alive. And so Jacob decided to pack up and start heading that way to see his long-lost son. But as he begins this journey, Jacob hesitates. There's something holding him back, and he's not quite sure if he should go down to Egypt. Genesis 46, and I'll read through the first few verses of Genesis 47. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. Then he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again. And Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. Then Jacob set out from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, their little ones, and their wives in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt. Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters. All his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. Now these are the names of the descendants of Israel who came into Egypt, Jacob and his sons. Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and the sons of Reuben, Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. The sons of Simeon, Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. The sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. The sons of Judah, Onan, Shelah, Perez, and Zerah. But and Onan died in the land of Canaan. And the sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul. The sons of Issachar, Tola, Puva, Yob, and Shimron. The sons of Zebulun, Sered, Elon, and Jaliel. These are the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Paddan Aram, together with his daughter Dinah. Altogether, his sons and his daughters numbered 33. The sons of Gad, Ziphion, Haggi, Shuni, Ezbon, Eri, Arodi, and Areli. The sons of Asher, Imnah, Ishva, Ishvi, Beriah, with Sirah, their sister. And the sons of Beriah, Heber, and Malkiel. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah, his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob, 16 persons. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin. And to Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On, bore to him. And the sons of Benjamin, Bela, Beker, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Ahi, Rosh, Muppim, Huppim, and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The sons of Dan, Hushim. The sons of Naphtali, Jaziel, Guni, Jazer, and Shillem. These are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel his daughter, and these she bore to Jacob, seven persons in all. All the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, who were his own descendants, not including Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were two. All the sons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. He had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen, and they came into the land of Goshen. Then Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father, in Goshen. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. Israel said to Joseph, "Now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive." Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household who are in the land of Canaan have come to me, and the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have.' When Pharaoh calls you and says, 'What is your occupation?' you shall say, 'Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth even until now, both we and our fathers,' in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians." So Joseph went in and told Pharaoh, "My father and my brothers with their flocks and herds and all that they possess have come from the land of Canaan. They are now in the land of Goshen." And from among his brothers, he took five men and presented them to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to his brothers, "What is your occupation?" And they said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds, as our fathers were." They said to Pharaoh, "We have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. And now please, let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen." Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen. And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock." Then Joseph brought in Jacob his father and stood him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How many are the days of the years of your life?" And Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning." And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. Then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with food, according to the number of their dependents. This is God's word for us today. Well, in our section, we have words from God. We have a family road trip. We've got a long-awaited reunion and unexpected kindness. That's all packed into our passage for today. But we probably have two main sections in our story: the trip to Egypt and then settling in Egypt. And what we'll see in this section is that God assures his people as they live away from their final home. God assures his people as they live away from their final home. So section one, back in chapter 46, God goes with his people to a foreign land. God is going with his people to a foreign land. So we have this reunion in chapter 45 where the brothers are finally reunited with their brother Joseph. Joseph sends them back to Jacob and says, "Bring my father and our whole family down to Egypt." So the brothers have to go back to their dad and persuade him that the son that he thought was dead for 20 plus years, is now alive. And after they finally convince Jacob, we read in verse 1 of our chapter 46, "Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba. Well, before we get to that place, it's probably good for us to ask a question, and maybe you have asked it already. Is it legitimate for Jacob to go to Egypt? Because if we remember the story of Genesis, we've seen what happened with Abraham and Sarah when they went down to Egypt. That didn't end so well. And then we saw in another famine when Isaac was going to go down to Egypt, God said, "Don't go." So Jacob knows the stories of his dad and his grandpa going down to Egypt and how God didn't approve of that. So is it legitimate for him to go to Egypt, even to see his long-lost son? Egypt is away from the promised land. It's a pagan place. And God brought his chosen family out of a pagan place into the promised land. He's made it clear he doesn't want his chosen family going back into their pagan roots. So, is it okay for Jacob to go? Apparently, Jacob is wondering the same thing, because as he starts on his trip, before he leaves Canaan, before he leaves the promised land, he stops at Beersheba, which is down in the south of Canaan. Why does he stop there? Well, again, if you remember the story of Genesis, Abraham, Grandpa Abraham, lived in Beersheba for a time. Dad, Isaac, lived in Beersheba for a time and built an altar to God there. So this place is a really significant place for this family. It's a place where they've met with God and worshiped him. And now Jacob goes back there, apparently, to show his devotion to God, his commitment, and to say, "Is it okay if I go?" And God shows up. So here's one observation, your first observation in this section. God rehearses his promises to the chosen family. God speaks to Jacob in a night vision. And think about this. It's been a long time since we've heard God speak directly to anybody. Joseph had some dreams, but they weren't God speaking directly to him. So we have to go all the way back into Jacob's early life to find God speaking to one of his people. Here he comes again and speaks to Jacob. And this is a really significant moment because this is the last time God will speak directly to anyone for 400 plus years. The next time we see God speaking directly to someone is Moses at the burning bush. So in this moment, we have God's words from the past coming to Jacob, a look back, and we also have a look forward into the future. And what does God say? Look at verse 3. "I am God, the God of your father." So as soon as he speaks, he identifies himself how? "I am the God of Isaac. I am the God of your forefathers. I'm the God who made a covenant with your dad and with your grandpa. I kept my promises to them, and I am committed to you." And so, he is assuring Jacob he is the same God that he has been. And what else does he say in verse 3? "Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt." Whew. There's the relief. Okay, good. God knows Jacob is concerned. Should I go? Should I not? Jacob knows the stories, and now God has given the okay. But what does God say next? That's kind of a look back at his dad, his grandpa. And now what's the look forward? Look again at verse 3. "Because there in Egypt, I will make you into a great nation." So years before, God had promised Jacob, "A nation is going to come from your family." Jacob's been kind of waiting for that. He's had 12 sons. They're having kids now. So this family is expanding. But now God says, "You will become a nation in Egypt." What? Of all places, in Egypt? Nobody was expecting that. But God goes further. Look at verse 4. "I myself will go down with you to Egypt." And here is the promise that God has given to each of the patriarchs. "I will be with you." Every one of the men that we have seen to this point has received that promise. The Creator God has chosen a people whom He will bless. And how does He bless them? By saying, "My presence will go with you in a unique way." So God is blessing this family with His own presence. And He tells Jacob, that's not going to change as you go down into Egypt. But Jacob might be wondering at this point, okay, I'm glad I can go. I'm glad you're going with me as we go. But are we going to come back? This is the land that you promised to our family. Are we going to get back here? So what does God say next in verse 4? I will also bring you up again. So even though God has okayed this trip down to Egypt, and even though He's going to go with Jacob, and even though He's going to provide for him there, He's going to bring him back, because Egypt is not the end game. It's not the end of the story. So God is rehearsing His promises, but now He gives one final sweet gift to Jacob. Did you notice this at the end of verse 4? And Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. That is such a sweet touch from God. Yes, He has been rehearsing the promises given to the family, but now He makes one promise for Jacob. Your loved son will be with you when you die, and he will have the honor of closing your dead eyes. What a sweet touch for Jacob himself. But not only does God rehearse these promises to the chosen family, not only looking back, but looking forward. Because why is God taking Jacob's family down to Egypt? Why are they going? Well, the immediate answer would be Jacob and Joseph need to be reunited. Dad and son need to get back together. And that's true. But that's not the big plan. So what's the second answer? Well, they're going down to Egypt so that God can protect the chosen family from famine, so they won't die in the land of Canaan from starvation. And that is true. But there's a bigger reason than that why this family is going down to Egypt. And to remind ourselves of what that is, turn back with me to Genesis 15. If you're using the Pew Bible, it's page 10. I want you to see this. These are words to Jacob's grandpa Abraham many years before. This is when God is making His covenant with Abraham, before he was known as Abraham. He's known as Abram. Genesis 15, look at verse 13. Then the Lord said to Abram, "Know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and will be servants there. And they will be afflicted for 400 years. But I will bring judgment on the nation that they serve, and afterward they shall come out with great possessions." So God told Abraham, eventually your family is going to go out of the promised land and be in a foreign land for more than 400 years. And they're going to be slaves there. And I eventually am going to bring them out back into the promised land. So, when Jacob is going down to Egypt, it's the fulfillment of what God told Abraham was going to happen. Abraham's offspring, his descendants, are now going into the foreign land where they will settle for a time, where they will be enslaved and afflicted, and eventually where God is going to bring them out. But the question is, why does this have to take so long? Why does Jacob's family have to go down and be there for four centuries and become slaves? Why can't they just go down, be reunited with Joseph, and then come back? Because God intends to save His people from bondage. God intends to get great glory for Himself by crushing the nation which enslaves His people and by rescuing them from slavery. And that exodus, that deliverance, will become the picture of God's mighty power to save. Through the rest of the Bible, that exodus, that deliverance, is the picture of how God rescues his people. So this is all part of a bigger plan that God is taking Jacob and his little family down into Egypt to settle there, yes, to meet his son, yes, to be saved from a famine, but ultimately so that God, centuries from then, can bring his people out into the promised land. Now back to chapter 46 of Genesis. So God is reassuring Jacob by rehearsing his promises and by giving a peek into his great plan. Second observation in this section, God moves the united family. God moves the united family. And as you heard, as we read through this, we have yet another list of names in Genesis. And you might remember that these lists aren't just meant to take up space. They're not just meant to try to make us stumble over names that are unfamiliar or maybe even funny sounding, but they are telling us something important. The list is giving us a point, and we're going to try to see what that is. But first, let's try to summarize this. The list gives us Jacob's descendants, his children, through the four women in his life. So in verses 8 through 15, we've got the children of Leah. And the total from her is 33. We have the children of Zilpah in verses 16 through 18. That's Leah's servant. And the total from her is 16. The children of Rachel, verses 19 through 22. The total from her is 14. And then we have the children of Bilhah, who is Rachel's servant. And the total from her is 7. So lots of names, lots of numbers. What's the point? Well, first, let's pick out one of our key words from Genesis. Look down at verses 6 and 7. You see one of our key words here? Offspring. The seed of the woman. From the beginning of Genesis, God's chosen seed, the offspring, has been growing and multiplying and expanding into a nation. God's plan is coming true. A second little thing to notice here is how comprehensive this list is, how full it is. Look at verse 7. All of Jacob's offspring he brought with him into Egypt. Now jump down to verse 26. All the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt. So the list is making clear the whole family, every single one, is going down to Egypt. Why is that significant? Because for decades, this family has been torn apart. You've got Judah over here. You've got Joseph over here. You've got animosity and deception and hostility. The family has been wrecked and ruined. But now what's happened? The family has been united, and they're all going down together to Egypt as part of God's plan. And to drive that home, did you see the final number that's emphasized in verse 27? All the persons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. Now let's remember that in the book of Genesis, numbers can be really significant. We've seen the number 7 is the number of perfection. The number 10 is the number of fullness or completion. So you multiply 7 by 10, and you have 70, which is the perfect number of fullness and completion. And the author is emphasizing the whole family, all of God's people in the chosen family, are all together, all coming down to Egypt. Now, for some of you who might have nerded out on the names or the list this week, and maybe you tried to count them all up, or maybe you drew a genealogy graph or a tree, a family tree or something. I did that. I do that when I go through this to try to help myself visually to see it on a piece of paper. There are some challenges in this list. If you bore down into it, we actually have two of the names in this list who are listed as going into Egypt who are actually already dead. So look at verse 12. Judah's sons, and Onan. Remember back in Genesis 38, these two guys were so wicked that God killed them? Well, now they're listed as part of the 70 that go down to Egypt. And it seems like you've got guys who are counted double, because you have Joseph and his sons who are listed in the 70, but then when you get to the end of the list, it says there's 66, and then it almost sounds like they're adding Joseph and Jacob and his two sons to get a total of 70. So what's going on here? Is the author just kind of messing with numbers? Well, to make it more complicated, in the New Testament, when Stephen, who's one of the main servants of the church, is preaching before he is stoned, he refers to this very situation, and he says that the number of Jacob's family who went down to Egypt was 75. Okay, so what do we do with this? Is our Bible full of contradictions? Do we have problems? Well, no, because as we've seen before in our genealogies, in our lists in Genesis, these lists are not so concerned with mathematical precision as they are with a theological point. And what's the point? Well, we've already said that the number 70 is the fullness, the completion of all of God's people following his plan, coming down to Egypt. So we don't need to be worried about numbers in this kind of a context. We need to think about what is the author trying to communicate? And that seems to be the point through this list of names. So God has reassured Jacob that he's doing the right thing in coming down to Egypt, and God is moving the entire family down into this country. But the question could be, how are they going to be welcomed in this country? And think about this. Egypt is getting inundated with immigrants. It's getting inundated with foreigners who want food, who want the benefits from Egypt. So here comes another family of 70 or more people who are coming down into the nation. How are they going to be received? And that brings us to our second section. God provides for his people in a foreign land. As Jacob and his family get close to Egypt, you can probably sense the anticipation building. Jacob is ready to see his son. He's getting closer and closer and closer. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And finally, they get close enough that Jacob sends Judah ahead to tell Joseph, we're almost there. So probably they're coming down the Mediterranean coast and they're coming down into the land of Egypt. And before they get too far in, they cross the border of Egypt and they're just in the land of Goshen, which is right there close to Canaan. They don't go way down into Egypt where Joseph probably is, but they stop in the land of Goshen and Jacob sends Judah down to get Joseph and bring him up to meet him. And once again, we see Judah rising to the top of the family as the leader. His dad, Jacob, now trusts him. And think about this full circle. Because who was the one who had the plot or the scheme to sell Joseph into Egypt? It was Judah. He had the plan to separate father and son. And now he's the one who's being sent to reunite father and son. It's a beautiful full circle, a beautiful picture of the redemption that God has brought in Judah's life. All right, so the family comes down into the land of Goshen. Joseph gets the news, and in verse 29, we read that Joseph prepared his chariot. That's kind of the idea of chucking stuff in the car and screeching out of the driveway to tear off to find your family. But frankly, when these two reunite, it's kind of disappointing. There's not a whole lot of information given. We want more of the emotional engagement of these two. It just says in verse 29, Joseph presented himself to Jacob. Wow, that sounds really stiff, mechanical. Joseph appeared to Jacob. Here I am, Dad. Why don't we have more detail? Well, we do get in verse 29 that he wept on Jacob's neck a good while. But frankly, there are some scenes that you just can't describe. You can't picture what this must have looked like as father and son are brought back together. And look at Jacob's reaction to this in verse 30. "Now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive." So remember when Jacob thought that Joseph was dead? He said, "You're going to bring me down to the place of the dead with sorrow." He thought he was going to die from heartbreak. But now he says, "I don't care if I die because I am so happy." So his view of death has even changed because he has seen his son. Well, after this reunion, Joseph quickly becomes Mr. Practical, and he jumps into a plan for how he can help his family get into Pharaoh's good graces. So he tells them, "I am going to go and pave the way before you." So our first observation in this section, God's man brings favor for God's people. God's man brings favor for God's people. So Joseph tells his brothers, "Okay, guys, I'm going to go see Pharaoh first, and I'm going to tell him that you've arrived, and I'm going to tell him that you are shepherds." Because Egyptians are just like any other humans, and they've got some kinds of people that they don't really like, and they really don't like shepherds. So I'm going to tell them that you're shepherds, and that's going to help you out in two ways. First, it's going to let Pharaoh know that you've brought all your stuff with you, and you're not going to try to live on government charity here in Egypt. And second, he'll probably let you stay far away from all the other Egyptians because they don't want you around. And that might actually help you because you can stay in the land of Goshen, which is the best land we've got right now. So I'm going to go in, I'm going to pave the way, and then I'm going to bring you guys in. And when you come in, don't talk a whole lot. Just answer the basic questions and say what I'm telling you to say. So the scene plays out pretty beautifully here for a little while. Joseph paves the way with Pharaoh, and then he brings in five of his brothers, probably because he doesn't want to overwhelm Pharaoh with 11 guys. You know, here they all are, and they just keep coming and coming and coming, and Pharaoh's kind of like, what are we going to do with all these people? So he only brings in five, so it's not overwhelming. And it seems to be going well, but then there's this moment of cold sweat, I think. The brothers are talking, answering Pharaoh's questions. Chapter 47, verse 3. They say, "Your servants are shepherds, as our fathers were." You can see Joseph over there to the side saying, okay, good. They gave the right answer. But then they keep talking. The nervous guys are talking again. In verse, they keep going after that. "We have come to sojourn in the land." We're here. We're here to stay. "Because there's no pasture for your servants' flocks at home in the land of Canaan." And right about then, you can hear Joseph whispering on the side, shut up, stop talking. And then they keep going and they drop another bomb in verse 4. "And now please let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen." And right about then, Joseph probably does a facepalm. Guys, idiots, just stop. But thankfully, Pharaoh agrees and tells Joseph, sure, let him have the best land. Let him have Goshen. And he adds a bonus on top. Did you notice this in verse 6? "And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock." Wait, what? So these perfect strangers that Pharaoh just met, he's willing to promote to positions of influence in his government? That's pretty incredible. God's man, Joseph, is bringing favor for God's people. And God is showing overwhelming kindness yet again to this family in a place where they never would have expected it. Second observation, God's man provides for the needs of God's people. So Joseph gets to settle his family in the prime real estate of Egypt. And there they will have all the space that they want, all the food that they need, and the security that will keep them safe. Frankly, in some ways, this chosen family has it better off than the other Egyptians around them. But before Joseph carries out Pharaoh's commands, he presents his father Jacob to Pharaoh. And it's interesting, this scene, because you almost have the roles reversed. Pharaoh the king is almost deferring to Jacob, the older man who blesses him. And did you notice that key word from Genesis a couple of times? Verse 7 and verse 11. Jacob blesses Pharaoh twice. And remember that it's always the superior who blesses the inferior. So here, Pharaoh and Jacob basically switch places, and Jacob is blessing this pagan king because he has been kind to God's people. But one other key word to bring out here. Did you notice how Jacob describes his life? Look down at verse 9. The days of the years of my sojourning. We've seen this idea before in Genesis. What does sojourning mean? It means to be a pilgrim, to be a wanderer. And we've seen this with Abraham, we saw it with Isaac, and now we hear it from Jacob. We have been wanderers. I, Jacob, have been a pilgrim for 130 years. I've moved, I've migrated, I've never really settled. I've never had a permanent home. And now we are coming down to Egypt, and we're going to sojourn or be a pilgrim here. This isn't our home. God has promised he's going to take us back to our permanent home someday. And friends, I think in this story of Genesis, we see Jacob's faith and God's plan. The great faith chapter in the New Testament, Hebrews 11, says this: By faith, Abraham went to live in the land of promise, Canaan, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob. What is a tent? It's a temporary dwelling, not a permanent dwelling. Why did Abraham do this? Because he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God. These all, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, these all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles. Or we could use Jacob's words, a sojourner, a pilgrim. So think about this. Abraham went into the promised land by faith, believing that one day his family would possess it. Jacob went out of the promised land into Egypt by faith, believing they would get back to it. Jacob believed God was going to bring him and his family back to their final home. So yes, God approved for him to go to Egypt. God was going to be with them in Egypt. God was going to provide for their needs in Egypt. But God is going to bring them back to the final place where he wants them to be. So we see in Jacob the faith that we also need. Maybe you've heard this question from people in the past. Why does God save somebody and then leave them in this world? Why not just save them and take them to heaven? Well, why did God not just take Jacob down, have him reunited with Joseph, and then bring him back? We've already observed God was taking Jacob's family into Egypt to leave them there and to exacerbate their problem and their situation so that when he delivered them, all the glory would be his. And so, brothers and sisters, why does God leave his people here in this world? It is because one day he will deliver us, but it will be to get great glory for himself after many difficulties, trials, tribulations. We, like Jacob, are pilgrims. We are sojourners in a foreign land. Throughout Scripture, Egypt is a place of slavery, a place of bondage. It's a place that God's people need to be delivered from, and they're not supposed to go back there. It's a picture of the world. And because we live in this world, we need to be delivered from it. And one day, God is going to do it to get great glory for himself by taking his people home to the place that he has destined for them. But while we wait, as sojourners, as pilgrims, how should we think? How should we live? Turn with me to Luke chapter 12, and this is where we will finish. Page 818 in the Pew Bible. Luke chapter 12. Here, Jesus is giving instructions to his disciples. So he's talking to God's people. And what does he say to them? Luke 12, look down at verse 22. And Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? If then you are not able to do as small a thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, and yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you are to eat and what you are to drink, nor be worried, for all the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you need them." So like Jacob, as you go into a foreign place, as you live in a foreign place, be assured that God is for you. Because what is Jesus saying here? To all of you who are my followers, to all of you who are Jesus' followers, God is for you. The Father knows what you need and what you face and what you're walking through. And you are precious to him. And he will provide for you. Perhaps you, as a follower of Jesus, have been confused by what God is doing in your life. Maybe you can't see the path ahead of you, and you don't know what God wants for you. Maybe you've been overwhelmed by the needs that you have or that your family has. How are we going to get through this? Maybe you've doubted whether God is really with you or for you. Brothers and sisters, God assures his people as we live away from our final home. And to you who are disciples of Jesus today, the same God who was with Jacob is the same God who is with you. The same God who made promises to Jacob is the same God who has made promises to you in the scriptures. The same God who promised to bring Jacob home, to bring his family home into the promised land, is the same God who has promised to bring you finally home into his presence. So what God was for Jacob, God is for you through Jesus Christ. But maybe you aren't a follower of Jesus. And maybe as you've looked around in your life and at this world, you have wondered, is this it? For sure, there are good things that I enjoy here, and there's some times when I really like life. But in the quiet moments when I'm alone, in the darkness with my own thoughts, I wonder if there's something more. And friend, there is something more. You will live somewhere other than this place forever, either in the presence of God or separated from the presence of God. This world is not your final home. It's not the final home for any of us. And if you come to God through Jesus Christ, you can have the assurance that God is with you and for you and will bring you finally into his presence. So we are all pilgrims, sojourners in this world. We are in a foreign place. And if you feel that tension in your life, I'm not as happy as I wish I could be. I wish life was more fulfilling. Is this all there is? That feeling, those thoughts are meant to point you beyond this life. That we are headed somewhere else. And the God who has saved you assures you that he will be with you until he brings you finally home. And so it's a really sweet gift today that we get to come to the Lord's table. Because right here is your assurance that God is with you and for you, and that he is going to get you home. This is one of the ways that our Lord keeps us assured and encouraged on our sojourning, on our journey. And it's so kind of him to give us this bread and this cup to take in our hands and put in our mouths to remind us that what we believe is true, it's real. And he is going to take us to be with him. So in a few minutes, as you take this in your hand, remember God has not forgotten his plans. He has not forsaken his purposes. And he is assuring you, even through this today. Let's take a few moments to pray, to give thanks, to prepare our hearts for this time. Men who are serving us, you can come. And in a few moments, Pastor Paul is going to come and lead us at the table.